Welcome back. It's a Tuesday, the 21st day of November, 2023. I'm your host, Mark Hall. And there was so much news on Monday that I literally ran out of time to put everything together and get it in the show before the deadline. So what I'm going to do today is begin with a few stories that didn't make it yesterday. Because let's be honest, folks, most of the other stories that are at least new in the news today, we've been hearing them for a long time anyway. You know, the kind of stuff that we've gotten inured to. Election fraud, senile old wannabe dictators getting embarrassed and walking into walls, massive government waste and the coming inevitable meltdown, and so on. So let's begin with a story that's not only good news, but actually, given the fraud we've come to expect, more than surprising. A man that some of the press calls a conservative, but actually almost appears to be a true libertarian. Some of that, if you saw the interview, came out when he sat down not too long ago with Tucker Carlson. Javier Milei overcame the Peronist machine, says some of the coverage, the mainstream media opposition, and is now the new president of Argentina. And in fact, what was a blowout result. And I got to say it, even in a place where they don't have the open fraud that we do here, you got to figure it probably took at least a supermajority in order to even appear to be a real win. And he went beyond that. This election, as you may recall, ended up being a runoff, and after finishing second in that previous one behind Finance Minister Sergio Massa, Milei got support from former President Mauricio Macri, and since then he's jumped way ahead in the polls. And even before the official result of the elections in Argentina, imagine this, folks, remember when this used to happen in the United States, Sergio Massa acknowledged defeat and congratulated his opponent, Javier Milei. Now that almost all the ballots have been counted after Sunday's election, Milei took fully 56% of the votes to 44% for his opponent in the left-wing Peronist coalition, and Argentina now has its first libertarian outsider president. Now at this point, I will quote as much as I can stand from the Reuters commentary. The outsider, they say, has radical views, and the country is now calling on him to, quote, fix an economy battered by triple-digit inflation, a looming recession, and rising poverty. Well, you know what, folks? Outright socialism or communism will do that. They do note that the candidacy of his rival, the Peronist and socialist economy minister, was hampered by the country's worst economic crisis in a couple of decades while he's been at the helm. Good grief. And Reuters seems upset by this because they say Milei is pledging economic shock therapy. His plans include, I hope you're sitting down, folks, shuttering the central bank, ditching the peso, and slashing spending. All kinds of potentially painful reforms, say the socialists, that resonated with voters that are understandably angry at the country's economic malaise. But they note, and this is at least true, Milei's challenges are enormous. He'll have to deal with the empty coffers of the government and central banksters, a creaking $44 billion debt program with the International Monetary Fund, and inflation nearing 150%, as well as a dizzying array of capital controls. They don't mention it. I think we need to. He's got to stay alive, too, to accomplish the things it seems he certainly intends to try. Now, at this point, it's interesting to note that there are certain similarities between the election of Milei and others that you may recall a bit closer to home here. Milei, as the press puts it, has made allegations of possible electoral fraud, reminiscent of those from not only Donald Trump, but also Brazilian President Jair Bolsonaro, who has received Trump-like treatment since also being undermined by a communist insurrection down south, and then deep-sixed by their own circus courts. And America's last actually elected president congratulated Milei on social media and said that the libertarian there would, quote, make Argentina great again. Says coverage, he is staunchly anti-abortion, favors looser gun laws, not exactly what you'd call a Second Amendment, but then again, they've never even come close to having one, and has criticized Pope Satan. Now, I find it interesting that most of the press doesn't even mention it, but the truth is, from what I can see, this guy really comes about as close to being a true Austrian economist, understanding the value of real money as opposed to fake, and the influence of nasty banksters and what fiat money does to an economy, more than anybody that's, well, even on the horizon, and that includes America at this point. And a while back, say some of the stories, he used to carry a chainsaw as a symbol of his planned cuts, but over recent weeks he shelved that in order to boost his more moderate image. I got to admit, folks, I really do like this. In the streets of Buenos Aires, drivers honked their horns. Many took to the streets to celebrate. Outside Milei's party headquarters in downtown Buenos Aires, a full-on party kicked off with supporters singing, buying beers from vendors, setting off colored smoke bombs, waving Argentine flags, and, yep, folks, even the yellow Gadsden Don't Tread on Me flag, which has emerged as a symbol of the new freedom movement. At least, folks, he can do one clear thing, and he's pledged to do it. Cut, slash, and burn the socialist economic wet blanket. And if he is able to do that, I suspect we'll see a country that was once one of the most prosperous, if not the most prosperous, in the entire world, begin to recover what free markets are actually capable of, and indeed, they may even come to remember. If I wanted to go for the good, the bad, and the ugly as a way to intro today, this is the story that would cap off the final two. And I saw it more than one place, but I like this summary from Sally Beck at the Burning Platform the best about yet another pilot who warns of an airline industry disaster due to the Zyklon B injections. Captain Shane Murdoch says the air industry is poised on the precipice of disaster. He's been a pilot for more than 40 years and is a qualified air accident investigator, and has found official data that backs up his claims of impending global catastrophe. The Australian captain adds, when correlated, the data indicate that there is an enormous problem that is having and will have a significant impact on aviation safety worldwide. There is enough evidence, he says, to be sending out red flags. There have been many tragedies this year, says the piece. Phil Thomas, young graduate of the Cadiz, Spain Flight Training Academy, fell ill and died suddenly in April. There have been 5 pilot incapacitations in March, including a pilot on British Airways who collapsed and died in Cairo not long before he was due to fly. And a lot of pilots, you may recall, well, at least used to be super fit. So why are so many dying suddenly? Does that give you a possible clue? Or at least collapsing? Captain Murdoch has concluded, and has the evidence to back it up, and we'll give you even more on that score in just a second, that they are suffering severe adverse reactions to the COVID-19 not vaccinations, and they include myocarditis or heart inflammation, brain fog, insomnia, blood clots, and anaphylaxis. You've heard all of these. We're kind of getting used to them, aren't we? That represent just some of the major known side effects. He thinks some pilots are ticking time bombs, and claims that many are not declaring their ill health. And your host has made this point, and the reason why it's true, clear for some time now. As he put it, they're not reporting the brain fog, the heart flutters, and the dizzy spells because they don't want to lose their jobs. And it occurs to me, all they'd really have to do is say, oh yeah, I'm suffering all that stuff, but hey, I took the COVID vaccine, and I'll point it out if you try to fire me. And I don't think anybody would dare to touch them, at least not officially. Back to the story here, which points out that in America, at least back when we used to have a Federal Aviation Administration that at least claimed they were concerned with aviation safety and pilot health, pilots who flew for the commercial carriers were required to have what's called a first-class aviation medical exam every 6 months. And the rules internationally generally state that they can pass that test only if they have a less than 1% chance of suffering an incapacitating illness. But how are they passing the medicals if they're suffering adverse medical reactions? Last year, what the story calls the Global Aviation Regulator, the Federal Aviation Administration in America, changed their ECG or electrocardiogram markers that measure what's called the PR interval, the time it takes for an electrical impulse to travel from one part of the heart to another, and it's an indicator of heart health. The new limit is now 50% longer than the previous one, meaning that if a pilot has developed a heart condition, not only could it slip past, they've loosened the regs to make it more likely. On November the 15th, 2020, Australian Airlines mandated the Zyklon B, a.k.a. COVID-19 vaccines, for 900 pilots and all air and ground crew. Pfizer, AstraZeneca, and Moderna were available there, down under. Today is the 3rd anniversary of that mandate, noted Captain Murdoch at the point the article was written, and he's one of 12 pilots who refused there to take it. He was sacked, of course, and accused of serious professional misconduct. Can you believe that, folks? That's downright insulting. To say that a pilot that actually cares about his health and the safety of his passengers is guilty of serious professional misconduct. No, he didn't show up drunk or rape a stewardess. I'll say it as kindly as I can. What the hell does that tell you about the damnable evil people who are allowing, no, mandating this kind of thing, and are essentially saying to you and to the rest of the world, screw you and the plane that you may die on? You may have the impression, folks, that it really bugs me when I see so-called aviation regulators and air safety experts, or even those who claim that they give a blankety blank about professional misconduct, showing us exactly what it looks like. Now, with the exception of the new anecdotes, admittedly, your host has talked about most of the things that led this story off for quite some time now. But what's new now? Well, here we go. And I'll introduce it this way. When a pilot puts out a Mayday radio call to air traffic control or is incapacitated or for some reason, maybe he has a radio failure, unable to do that, there's a thing called a transponder, and it has a 4-digit code on it. Every pilot knows exactly what codes mean very special or very important things. 7700 is one of those. They squawk 7700 anytime there is a Mayday, and they are reserved for really serious incidents like pilot incapacitation or an uncontained fire on board. There are actually very few scenarios that warrant an actual outright Mayday. Pilots are understandably even reluctant to declare an emergency because, among other things, there will be an investigation. But when lives are at stake, you do what is necessary. Passengers and crew, say the regs, must face genuine peril. And here's the news. There's been an unprecedented rise in the number of 7,700 squawks and Mayday calls as tracked by a bot set up by the X account GFC Flight Alerts, which posts when a pilot squawks 7,700 anywhere in the world. Between 2018 and 2019, the average number of Maydays was 29.1% of all distress calls. Things like, I have an engine issue, or maybe I'm running low on fuel, or I've encountered extreme in-flight icing. I need out of here fast. During 2022, though, the Mayday calls increased by 272%. Guess what happened just prior to that? In the first three quarters of 2023, that increase is now 386%, and the graph, if you plot it out, shows an instant steep increase. Right exactly when pilots were mandated to take these poisonous injections. And I've pointed this out before. Back when we had an FAA that did give a blankety-blank about aviation safety and pilot health, any pilot that took any type of medicine that had been on the open market, fully approved for less than full 12 months, was disqualified from flight. Grounded. Literally, medically unfit to fly. Do not issue. Oh, that is, up until they decided to mandate the death jab. In other words, it used to be the case that pilots were forbidden to take part in drug trials and experimental testing. But a couple of years back, if they wanted to fly, they weren't a pilot anymore. They were a guinea pig. And that means so are most of you. Captain Murdoch puts it this way, quote, somewhere on the international network, daily, you'll find a plane that's been turned back because of a health emergency, either a passenger health emergency or a crew health emergency. And he also looked at the number of multi-crew licenses issued by Australia's regulator, the CASA, or Civil Aviation Safety Authority, how's that for a misnomer, which has the authority to impose restrictions on airline transport pilot licenses, particularly when it comes to flight environments requiring multiple crew. And that includes a pilot whose medical status shows a possibility they may become incapacitated during flight. Guess what? There's been an unprecedented 126% increase in what are called limitations there, too. Who could have thought it?
I do have one other story here I want to mention. If you're not aware of it, this is just something that I saw late on. I don't know that it has any global implications, but it's, you know, it may. Anyway, there are vets all over the country in at least, about a dozen states at this point that are finding a respiratory illness potentially fatal with dogs. So it's a canine illness, and they have tested it and said that it doesn't react with any known virus or bacteria, so they don't know what the heck this mysterious illness is, but the symptoms are coughing, sneezing, discharge from the eyes or nose, trouble breathing, and fatigue. It is not responsive to traditional antibiotics, so it's antibiotic resistant, and a lot of dogs are dying from it. It is considered highly contagious, maybe fatal. It looks like kennel cough, but it's worse. And so basically what they're saying is that it may be from contact with other dogs. Places like dog parks, kennels, groomers pose a major risk. So just be aware of that.
This came out early over the weekend, and as the weekend progressed, I saw more and more people speculating about what might be called a bioengineered form of canine COVID. Yeah, can you imagine they would even remotely consider doing anything like that? Oh, and while we're doing stories that are interesting and relevant, but not necessarily a fait accompli yet, this one certainly raises some eyebrows. James Woods, the actor, not exactly on Hollywood's happy list for some time now, and he tweets at Real James Woods, has noted that following Xi's visit and the sudden cleanup of the feces and needles in the streets of San Francisco, I guess it isn't worth doing it for the people that live there, especially those that are real American citizens, but it seems to be, though, when the real supreme leader shows up, that would be Chinese CCP leader and Premier Xi, and tightens the leash on his puppet communist Chinese dictator, that would be California's wannabe dictator, Gruesome Newsom. Well, you know this, they cleaned up the streets. But here's what @RealJamesWoods has retweeted. So it says, in one night, San Francisco's homeless completely disappeared in preparation for Newsom's bend-the-knee grovel to communist dictator Xi. Just what happened to them? Where are they now? Well, watch this creepy video, he says, and it seems to imply something really nasty might have happened to them. Maybe they went to the same place as the 2,000 or so missing kids on Maui. No, wait a minute. I bet kids fetch a higher price on the sex slave market than old hagged-out drug-infested hippies and, well, even homeless military vets might. I'll spare you the speculation. It certainly isn't pretty, but hey, it does fit with the communist pattern if you think about it. On the other hand, maybe they're just shipping them over to Oakland and they'll be back soon. Here's another one of those continuing stories we now have more information about. You perhaps recall that over the weekend, Elon Musk posted on X, formerly known as Twitter, that they'll be filing a thermonuclear lawsuit against the leftist Soros-connected nonprofit sick Media Matters, double sick, for, quote, all those who colluded and completely misrepresented the real user experience on X. Well, as promised, Elon did file the suit, and time's up for Media Matters Manipulator, says the story from Tyler Durden and Zero Hedge. The lawsuit, just filed before the U.S. District Court for the Northern District of Texas, Fort Worth Division, alleges the organization's tactics were, say it with me folks, manipulative and deceptive. Anybody really surprised? The suit claims that Media Matters has opted for new tactics in its campaign to drive advertisers away from the now politically incorrect X. Media Matters, it says, has manipulated the algorithms governing the user experience on X to bypass safeguards and create images of X's largest advertisers in their paid posts adjacent to racist incendiary content, leaving the false impression, it says, that these pairings are anything but what they actually are, manufactured, inorganic, and extraordinarily rare. And they went on to describe how Media Matters executed this plot in a number of steps, as their internal investigations there at X have now revealed. And the lawsuit goes on to describe that in some level of excruciating detail, managing to design, they said, a single feed for a specific single purpose, to produce side-by-side ad and content placements that they could screenshot in an effort to alienate advertisers. Media Matters, continues the suit, omitted mentioning any of this in their so-called report published November 16 of this year, 2023, that displayed what they said were instances that Media Matters found on X advertisers' paid posts featured next to so-called neo-Nazi und white nationalist content. Nor did Media Matters otherwise provide any context regarding the forced, inauthentic nature and extraordinary rarity of these pairings. However, relying on the specious narrative, it says, propagated by Media Matters, the advertisers that were targeted took those pairings to be anything but rare and organic. In other words, folks, they swallowed the bait and drank the Kool-Aid, they drank the Bud Light, with all but one of the companies featured in the Media Matters piece withdrawing all of their ads from X, including Apple, Comcast, NBC Universal, and IBM, some of X's largest advertisers. This, folks, is how a public-private partnership, a.k.a. fascist dictatorship, actually works. They strangle those that don't play ball with the new Reich. Indeed, in pulling all their advertising from X in response to this intentionally deceptive report, IBM, it says, called the pairings, quote, an entirely unacceptable situation, and only Oracle didn't withdraw their ads. The truth, says Musk and his company, bore no resemblance to Media Matters' narrative. In fact, IBM's, Comcast, and Oracle's paid posts appeared alongside the fringe content that was cited by Media Matters for only one viewer out of more than 500 million on all of X. Oh, and guess which one that was. Say it with me, folks. Media Matters. Not a single authentic user on the X platform saw IBM's or Comcast's or Oracle's ads next to the content, which Media Matters achieved only through its own manipulation of X's algorithms, as they have described. And in Apple's case, only two out of more than 500 million active users saw its ads appear alongside the fringe content cited in the article, at least one of which was, the same aforementioned Media Matters. Bottom line, they say, Media Matters maliciously misrepresented the X experience with the intention of harming X and its business. Now here, folks, is where your host interjects a quick comment. Let's see. Big Brother and its Media Matters et al. Public-private partners want to fine Donald Trump $250 million, but they're just getting rolling. They ultimately want to take billions away from him for what? Telling the truth about an election that they wanted to misrepresent, and even have been putting people in jail. No jury of your peers. Hell, they don't even have any evidence, as we've seen this week, for daring to think they had a right to petition the government for a redress of grievances. And how about Alex Jones? He told the truth. And they fined him hundreds of millions, no, a billion if they can get away with it, but that's kind of like blood from a turnip. Still, I think Media Matters, with Soros's kind of deep pockets, ought to be up for at least a few billion, don't you? Don't hold your breath. The story goes on to tell us that ex-CEO Linda Yaccarino, who's reportedly been under all kinds of pressure by various ad companies to resign, defended the company in a statement she released on Monday. If you know me, she said, you know I'm committed to truth and fairness, but here's the truth. Not a single authentic user on X saw IBM's, Comcast, or Oracle's ads next to the content in Media Matters article. Only two users saw it. Yeah, a lot of this is a repetition. But she said, don't be manipulated. Stand with X. Publix Michael Schellenberger noted that despite the lack of verified evidence behind Media Matters' claims, its tactics are still highly effective, and he concluded by asking on X, what is Media Matters exactly, and why is Media Matters leading a disinformation campaign and advertiser boycott against Elon Musk and X, and what, here's the real question, folks, what is its real agenda, unquote, as if we didn't already have a pretty clear idea. Whereupon he proceeded to go into some detail on his Substack about why Media Matters is, as he put it, a Democratic front group. I think the real truth, folks, is WEF, far-left, socialist, world controller front group. Still, he said, the attacks on X make it clear that the real concern of Democratic Party elites is their lack of control over the public conversation. He provides a lot of backup for that statement and then concludes that the real agenda behind the latest Media Matters attack on X is the same as the one that we saw behind the Democrats' attack on Trump and on the Republicans. Democrats want to control the conversation. And as Zero Hedge summarizes it all, we need to understand it's time to no longer trust the major news media. And that's a trend that's already well underway, even increasingly and ironically among Democrats, at least the real kind that actually realize, as Ronald Reagan once said, I didn't leave the party left me. And they went over the leftist cliff, concludes Tyler Durden. One thing's for sure, we're glad not to be the head of Media Matters, Angelo Corazzoni, who tonight faces his own company's existential threat from a man with the deepest pockets in the world. We can only hope, folks, that maybe there'll be justice done, and a few of these far-left anti-everything, especially anti-human agendas, will get what they deserve. At least, though, and this is good news, they're being revealed more and more often and more in detail, and more people are even starting to recognize what's going on and object to it, maybe even come out of her. And before I close, I guess you could say this is a quick program note here. Had some problems today with the automation system and the tools that let me link into the network and make sure that the news is going to run as it's supposed to from the recording on the station. Well, that was all messed up, and I wasn't able to get in and do it. But at least the podcast should be up, and if you're hearing this, it means finally it was. That'll do it for today, folks. Thanks again for being with us, and may Yahuwah bless you and yours.